Winter Training Considerations, this week on Mail Call Mondays. I'm John McQuay with 8541 Tactical, and this is Mail Call Mondays, the show that answers your questions about precision rifles, optics, and equipment. Welcome to another Mail Call Mondays, and this is our first Mail Call Mondays of 2020. This is Season 9, and I am absolutely amazed that we have gotten this far. So this Monday, our first question comes from Martin, and Martin asks, winter training considerations. Not a long question, but I know you can make a 10-minute video on that. Happy New Year, John. Well, Happy New Year, Martin. And winter training considerations seem apt because obviously we are here in the beginning of January. We've still got plenty of winter left. But the what you have to accommodate for shooting in the winter is going to be vastly dependent upon where you are at. In the U.S. or where you're at around the world. Speaking of the U.S. specifically, obviously winter training considerations are going to be vastly different from shooting in Tampa, Florida versus shooting in North Dakota or Minnesota or Colorado or anywhere you start to get into high latitudes and high altitude. There you're going to have to really, really pay attention because it could be a life or death situation, not just being uncomfortable. So here in southern Indiana, winter can really be a flip of the coin. We've had winters where we have record lows, we have sub-zero weather, really bad situations, snow on the ground, ice, where being outside for too long really is not a comfortable thing to be in. And if you don't have the right clothing, it can be lethal. However, you know, we also have the winters like we're having right now where it is relatively mild. We had below freezing last night, but we actually have a flood advisory out right now for the next couple of days because the temperature shot up. We get thunderstorms and we get a lot of rain. So it's really just kind of all over the place. But also you have to be greatly concerned when you are getting in these just above freezing temperatures and it's raining. Hypothermia can set in very quickly if you get wet and then you're still in those cold environments. So clothing really is key for me when I start to look at training out in cold weather. And clothing makes the difference no matter where you're at. Because even if you are in a warmer situation, if you really misestimate the conditions and you start to sweat and those base layers don't do their job, then very quickly you can get chilled out, your core temperature can start to drop, and you can have all kinds of problems. So I like to go by an old term called comfortably cool. A lot of people, when they go outdoors, they want to be this nice toasty warm kind of thing. But the problem is, if you are toasty warm, as soon as you start moving, you start sweating. Once you start sweating, you start to soak out your base layers. They don't do as good a job of insulating you because when you're picking clothing systems, you need clothing that is going to basically hold air. Dry air is what is insulating you from that outside cold air. So once you get wet, you get chilled, and then bad things start to occur. If you are cool, now not cold, not numb, but if you are cool, then you prevent your body from sweating, and if you don't sweat, those layers stay dry for longer. That moisture doesn't infiltrate all your insulation, and it doesn't cool off as quickly. I will usually, if it is anything even approaching freezing, I will usually go with a polypropylene or a merino wool base layer underneath my clothing. And that just helps keep a dry layer against me. Polypropylene is great as far as working in more damp environments because it dries out very quickly. Now, if we're talking about range training, you're probably not going to be out overnight. You're probably going to go out, do what you need to do, and then come back and have facilities to be able to take your clothing off, wash it, dry it, etc. But when I'm backpacking, I like polypropylene because it can dry out very quickly. In fact, very often it can dry on your body while you're in the sleeping bag. So that is really a nice thing. But polypropylene will stink really quickly. Some of the older stuff picks up bacteria and body odors, and it really holds on to that bacteria and that oil, and it makes it very difficult to get those odors out. Some of the newer stuff from Arc'teryx and Patagonia is much, much better. It has different materials woven into it. Some has silver woven through it to try to prevent bacteria from growing. Others just have different treatments to the fabric that prevent bacteria and prevent oils from propagating through the material. Now, on the flip side of it, merino wool, I absolutely love for base layers or next to skin. It's not scratchy like traditional wool. And merino wool is naturally antimicrobial, antibacterial, and it really does not pick up the stink. Now, obviously, you wear it for a couple of weeks, it's going to start to smell. But for short-time wear, like you would for a backpacking trip, that kind of thing, it's great. The drawback to it is it does not dry out as quick. You do have to take that into account if you are going to be in wet conditions. Now, once I get through the base layers, then I have to start considering my intermediate insulation. And this is really where that temperature level is going to factor in. Something like what I'm wearing right now, this is a Patagonia Better sweater. This is great for more active pursuits when it's in that freezing temperature. It breathes very, very well. There's no wind stop here. So if I'm going to be active, like if I'm going to throw on a plate carrier and I'm going to be running and gunning, then something that breathes like this very well works, because if you do start to sweat, that sweat has some place to go. That body moisture has a place to go, and you have a better chance of drying out before you soak through and then chill. If I am going to be more static and I'm wearing something like this, then I need to keep a wind blocking layer on that I can throw over top. Even if we stop to jam mags or take a drink or brief for the next evolution, it's really important to throw something on really quick so you don't get chilled through and you can maintain that core temperature. The flip side of that is you need to be able to ditch that layer again and go back into that high breathability state when you go back into the active pursuits. You don't want to leave that wind blocking layer on because you're all nice and toasty now, and then sweat out and soak through your layers. So I usually will take a soft shell out. I like soft shells because they're a balance between breathability and a little bit of moisture repellence. One of my favorite shells that I use right now is an Arc'teryx Drac. Unfortunately, they don't make the Drac anymore. It is a really heavy-duty, I believe it's Durastretch Tweave. It's a really heavy-duty material, so it is good when you have weapons and gear abrading against it. It stretches really well, and it does repel light rain, light moisture, light snow. Even a heavy snow, Drac will kind of ditch that pretty well. I've got some other layers. I've got an Arc'teryx combat jacket that also works very well, but it's very thin, has almost no insulating properties to it at all. The Drac is a little bit heavier material. It helps block that wind just a little bit more. And again, a little bit higher durability on it. So those are my favorite there. For my lower extremities, if we are in winter and we are in these mixed environments where I may encounter snow or I may encounter a light rain, I will usually wear a pair of Arc'teryx combat pants. Again, they're a very stretchy, soft shell material. They shed snow, they shed light rain, and they don't limit mobility at all. So if I have a insulating layer on underneath, a base layer, and then I throw combat pants over top, that is usually good for me. Again, for active stuff, like if you're running and gunning in PRS type stages, or running and gunning for carbine or handgun training, then that stuff works very well. Now, if we go into a more static pursuit, which I think a lot of guys are thinking about when they're thinking about winter precision rifle training, then we have to start adding extra layers. So when I go into something where I'm going to be laying on the ground, the first thing I need to make sure I have a good shooting mat, something to insulate me from the concrete firing line. If I can get off of the concrete, either onto gravel or onto grass, that is better. But if I have the option of concrete or snow, then concrete is going to be the better option. You just want to make sure that you have a nice thick shooting mat underneath you, because when you lay down on that mat, you're going to compress your insulation. So any insulating layers that you put on, you're going to mash flat, you're going to push out all that air that gives you that insulation, and you're going to have much less to keep the heat from soaking out of your body into the ground. So that shooting mat is the big deal there. Either some really nice closed cell foam, or if you have an inflatable sleeping pad, something that I use for backpacking quite a bit, an inflatable sleeping pad will definitely help you out there. Now, just make sure you don't sink your bipod claws into it, because obviously, that is not going to work very well, but something just to get your body off the ground and insulate you there. That is going to help you stay out longer and resist fatigue for a whole lot longer. Now, if you don't have that and you're laying flat on the ground, then just limit the amount of time that you are laying on the gun. So go through, fire your 5 or 10 shot string or whatever, and then stand back up and let your body regenerate that heat, get comfortable again before you lay back down behind the gun. So the less amount of time that you're on the ground pressed against that cold hard concrete, the less amount of heat is going to soak out of your body. Now, there is a double-edged sword there, because if you're in a very windy area, then when you're standing up, you're having to deal with the wind blowing against you, which is also pulling heat out of you. So you have to kind of balance those two. Layers, as far as insulating layers, I could do hours of videos on insulating layers. When we are talking about backpacking, that kind of stuff, I like down. Some of the more hydrophobic down layers are great for lightweight and fast backpacking, because you're probably not going to be wearing your down layer while you are moving with a intermediately heavy pack. But when you get to a spot, down compresses very small. It lofts out pretty quickly. So you can pull it out, shake it out, throw it on, and now have your nice insulating layer on to keep you warm on breaks or when you get into camp. I run a down sleeping bag because there really aren't any synthetic fibers out there right now that will compress down like down and then fluff out and loft out and provide the insulation that down does. The problem is when we get over to precision rifle, more military or law enforcement type pursuits, down is a really horrible idea, because once down gets wet, it's pretty much done for. It's not going to give you anywhere near the insulating properties that synthetics do. Now, you can dry down out, the insulation returns, you're good to go, but during an op, you're not likely to be able to have a situation where you can strip things down, hang them up in the trees, and air it out. With synthetic insulation, even if you trudge through a river, you come out the opposite side, you're soaked through, you can usually wring that stuff out, shake it out, put it back on, and it will loft out and provide a little bit of insulation. Not as good as when it was totally dry, but better, and it seems to dry on body better than down, or better than natural fibers like wool as well. So I really like to use synthetic insulation. My favorite cold weather range jacket right now is the Arc'teryx Cold WX-LT. They do make a Cold WX and then a Cold WX-SV, so two other layers. So they make a heavier weight and then a really heavy weight winter jacket. But for what I mostly encounter here in Indiana, the cold weather light works for me because I layer underneath it. So it has a Korloft insulation, and then it has a Gore Windstopper membrane in the jacket. It has a really nice helmet compatible hood that I can pull up. So it really works well for me to be able to throw that on and keep that heat in. It has a hem adjustment cord, so I can pull it tight and keep any drafts out. Other than that, I don't have any really heavily insulated pants for right now, Usually my legs are the last thing to get cold. As long as I'm keeping my core protected, I'm usually pretty good. But I will put heavyweight polypropylene long johns on underneath whatever shell pants that I'm wearing when I get into the really cold temperatures out there. Again, the key thing is layering so that I have multiple layers trapping that air and I can doff layers when I need to be able to move or to keep myself from sweating, and then put layers on as needed. There have been a couple of days where I go out to the range and we start in the morning where the sun is just barely broken the horizon, or it's cloudy in the morning and you start off pretty cold, but then you get into the routine, you get moving, you start to feel your core temperature rising, the sun comes out and starts shining on you, becomes a glorious range day, but you need to kick layers off to keep from sweating out. So match the layers. Synthetic is better. You don't have to go to the expensive stuff like Arc'teryx. I like Arc'teryx gear because it lasts. Arc'teryx doesn't give me anything. I bought it all, but I find that it's stuff that I don't have to worry about. I absolutely hate getting cold and wet. So buying the right gear that makes that less miserable, that means all the world to me. And if it costs a little bit of extra money, then for me, it's worth it. But there are a lot of other lower cost options out there. In fact, you can go to your local Army surplus store and you can get a lot of gear that will work somewhat well for a lot less money. Still, the old Marine Corps Poly Pros, those are some of the best intermediate base layers, in my opinion, because they're cheap, they're fairly durable, and they work very well when they get damp or when they get wet. Now, there is better commercial stuff out there, but those are a really, really good budget-conscious option. So that is really my core winter clothing lineup. Now, if you are somewhere in, like I said, North Dakota or up in the mountains, up in high altitude in Colorado, then you're going to have to utilize a little bit more layers, a little bit more severe layering systems with heavier insulation, but the principles are going to remain the same. Now, one of the really key things when we start to get into precision rifle training are hands. We have to have enough dexterity to be able to manipulate the bolt, manipulate the trigger, manipulate the safety, turn the turrets, you know, do all these detail-oriented tasks. If you have a ballistic calculator, you have to be able to manipulate that. So that's all things that require sometimes even the actual touch of your skin. Some gloves don't really like touch screens really well. So we have to keep that in mind, but also you have to remember that digits are most susceptible to the cold. That's where you're going to start picking up frostbite first. Your nose, your ears, your fingers, your toes. And once your hands and your fingers start to get numb, you're really going to have problems getting good training value out of that session because it's going to be miserable. You're going to have trouble feeling your trigger. Everything starts to hurt more when it's cold. So when you slam your hand against something, it really is not comfortable. Even a minor bump that wouldn't have fazed you in warm weather, you start to feel it more in the cold. So gloves are really one of those things that I take pretty seriously. Now, here in southern Indiana, we usually do not get cold that is so severe that you have contact issues with metal. And what I mean by contact issues is when I went through mountain warfare training, it actually gets cold enough up in some regions here in the U.S. that if metal sits outside, the temperature of the metal drops to the point where if you touch it with exposed skin, your skin will immediately freeze to the metal. The moisture that is that exists in those outer layers of skin will flash freeze to the metal. And it's really, really not a comfortable thing to be in. Everybody has seen the Christmas Story, and you see Flick stick his tongue to the light pole and freeze. Well, that's because the moisture on his tongue froze to the light pole. When you get into extreme cold, then the moisture in your skin can freeze to metal. So there you need to wear a contact glove to keep your hands off the metal. I like these Outdoor Research PL100 sensor gloves. Again, we're not sponsored by Outdoor Research. I purchased these. Outdoor Research has sent us gloves in the past, but I picked these guys up on my own. These are one of my favorite winter gloves, period, because even when we don't get down into the super freezing cold, if I just want to keep my hands off the metal or keep a little bit of wind off my hands, these are the gloves I turn to. I even wear these when I'm running in the cold. So they're a pretty lightweight fleece glove, and they do have sensor technology built into them, so it does transmit the touch from your finger into screens on iPhones. iPhones are notoriously picky about that, so these work great. I can actually operate my iPhone with the gloves on, so when I'm running a ballistic app or communicating with my Kestrel and that, then I can still do it with these gloves on. I don't have to strip them off. Additionally, the trigger finger is thin enough. There's hardly any material to compress here. So when I'm working with lighter weight triggers, like the TriggerTech Diamond that we have in this rifle, then I don't have to compress insulation before I start applying pressure to the trigger. When you're working with very light triggers in cold weather, that is a really big key concern. That's why when we get into actual building a rifle up for cold weather, I prefer intermediate weight two-stage triggers. That way that first stage is heavy enough to actually compress the insulation in your glove while you're pulling the trigger through the first stage. And then when you get to the second stage, everything's compressed and you can feel the break of the trigger on the second stage. When you're working with a lightweight single-stage trigger, you don't have that benefit. So it's more important to wear thinner gloves that you can feel through. So in intermediate cool weather, then these gloves are great. If we get into really, really frigid weather, then these combined with an outer glove, an insulation glove and a shell glove are a really, really good option, because then while you're doing all the tasks that don't require a high level of detail, then you can keep the whole glove system on and work with it, moving the gun around, doing different things like that. When you get to the point where you need a high degree of detail, then you can strip the outer glove off and maintain the inner glove so that you are still protected from any of the metal on the rifle. So that is really kind of important. Now, we talked about the metal on the rifle getting too cold and causing problems with your hand freezing to the gun. That may lead you to believe that, okay, well, what if I just keep the gun in the truck and keep it warm? That causes all kinds of different problems. From my experience, what is best is if you allow the rifle to climatize to whatever the outdoor temperature is prior to your shooting session. Otherwise, you can get moisture condensation, you can get frosting, you can get the action freezing up, you can get all kinds of really weird stuff occurring if you are constantly going through vast temperature swings. So what I would recommend is if you know you're going to go out and shoot in a sub-zero situation the day before, it may be a good idea to store the rifle somewhere where it's going to climatize to that sub-zero temperature beforehand. When you get out to the range, really, really keep in mind what you're doing if you have a chance to go in and out of a climate-controlled clubhouse, or if you're bringing it in and out of a truck or an SUV that has heater going. It's better to let the rifle get cold and let it stay cold than it is to go back and forth. The main thing that we're worried about is frosting or condensation on the optic and frosting of the action. When I went through mountain warfare training again, we would actually keep the rifles out in the vestibule of the tents. We wouldn't bring them into the inner tent with us because bringing the rifles into the inner tent and letting them come up in temperature and then dragging them back outside can allow condensation on, and the rifles can actually freeze up when they go back outside. So it's not a good situation to be in. So you want to make sure that the rifle stabilizes and stays in intermediate temperature. I don't think that bringing it in and getting it hot is going to prevent any of the contact issues because the metal will cool off relatively quickly when you get back out into a cold ambient situation. So those are the main considerations for shooting in the cold. One other one that I really want to bring up is dehydration. Dehydration really will jump up and get you in cold weather just as bad as in hot weather. When we're out on the range in the sun, in the heat, in the middle of summer, and we're sweating, and you get that dry throat, you get thirsty, you actually have a drive to start drinking water. When you are out in training in the winter, you're still out in cold, dry air. It's still sucking the moisture out of your body. You're still exerting yourself just like you would during the summer. Now, you're probably not sweating like you do in the summer, but you still have to be consuming water. You still have to be taking fluids in to be able to stay hydrated, stay focused on what you're doing, and not end up getting dehydrated. So what I will generally do is make sure that I'm bringing out something that's hot to drink. For me, it is much easier to stay hydrated and continue to drink with something like hot coffee. Now, coffee is not the ideal thing to drink to stay hydrated because caffeine is a diuretic, but you are still consuming a hot beverage versus if you brought out just regular cold water and had it sitting out there. If you are already starting to get chilled, it's going to be very difficult to force yourself to drink cold water. You also want to make sure that if you are bringing water out, you're bringing it out in some manner that is not going to allow the water to freeze while you are out. If you are in extreme cold weather temperatures, it's very easy for that water to freeze over, and maybe it doesn't freeze solid, but can freeze over quick enough that canteens will no longer work. A lot of water bottles that have narrow necks will get an ice plug in them, and you won't be able to get the water out. So keep that in mind. It may be a good idea to go ahead and put warm or hot water in a thermos and take that out if you want to drink water. If not, some kind of hot drink to keep you going. I will usually take about 60 ounces of coffee out with me when I go out for a true cold weather training session. It allows me to keep that going, keep it running through, and it helps. It's a little bit of a morale booster too when I can stop after a string of fire, stand up, stretch out, warm back up, drink some hot coffee, warm up my hands, and then get going. Another really good option that is more of a morale booster, but can actually have some accuracy benefits are hot hands or heat packs. They are an air sensitive hand heater. I like to keep those in my pockets when I'm shooting winter matches because it keeps my hand nice and warm. But again, it's also kind of a morale booster. You can focus on the heat coming out of them, and it really helps bring your spirits up a little bit. In NRL 22 competition, I've started to notice that I get better results if I keep my ammunition in the same pocket as the hand heater. I think it's probably keeping that lubrication for the bullets a little bit more... or a little bit lighter, not as viscous as when they get really, really cold. But keeping your heater in your pocket, keeping your hand in there and keeping it warm will probably give you a little bit better feel on the trigger, and it will keep your hand from getting stiff and getting cold. If you're starting to get older, then you notice that when your hands start to get really cold, they get a little bit stiff. So keeping those hand warmers in the pocket is a great idea. Now, bear in mind that they do require air circulating through. So occasionally I'll take them out and fluff them up in the air and then put them back in the pocket because they are air reactive. So if you seal them up inside of a shell jacket, they're probably not going to work really well. So just one last thing to keep in mind. So that's pretty much my considerations for shooting in the cold. The one last thing I didn't mention is footwear. Footwear is highly, highly dependent. Usually I am just wearing a set of hiking boots with a set of heavyweight wool socks when I'm out in the normal winter temperatures. When it gets really cold and I know I'm going to be standing on a concrete pad all day, I've got a set of Salomon Tundra boots that I will put on. They have some high-speed special NASA aerogel stuff in them. They seem to work very, very well, but I have to be careful because if it is not well below freezing, then those boots are actually too warm for me to wear in winter conditions. They are high boots. They will work in while I have a pretty good amount of snow on the ground. So they're kind of my favorite if I know I'm going to be standing on a concrete pad in very, very cold conditions. So that's going to do it for cold weather considerations. A couple of you guys asked me about this rifle. Now, we haven't talked a lot about it in the past. This is the Stumpy Tree O'Hate. This is the Ultimatum U300 action that was since replaced by the Ultimatum Deadline. So this is a discontinued action. They don't make this action anymore. We sent this down to Accurate Ordnance and had it chambered up in 308. It is sitting in a Modular Driven Technologies ESS chassis. We have one of their carbine tube stocks on the back and a carbon fiber tube forend on here. And it makes up a really nice compact package. And I really have this guy set up more as a scope testing gun than anything else. I get tired of taking my match rifle and having to pull scope off of it and then put a scope on that we're testing. This allows me to use just standard 308 to test scopes. It gets a little bit of recoil going on the scope, but it also has a pretty significant barrel life. So the barrel that we have on here is about a M24 contour. It's a fairly thick barrel, fairly short barrel, gives us good rigidity. It is something like a 17 and a quarter inch barrel. I don't recall offhand. I sent it in. I wanted it to come right to the edge of the carbon fiber tube and still have enough room to attach a suppressor. We do have an Area 419 Hellfire adapter on here, protecting the threads. And this allows me to either throw a Hellfire brake on it if I want to keep the rifle very, very short, or I can go ahead and screw on my Silencer Co. Hybrid 46 that has the Hellfire adapter screwed into the back of it. So it will just screw right onto the Hellfire taper mount here, and it will be good to go. We do have the Modular Driven Technology SkyPod down here, and don't worry guys, we are doing a full review of this. I just wanted to make sure I got a good number of matches underneath me because I have a variety of different thoughts on it. So just want to make sure I got enough experience with it before I came to you guys and told you how I feel about it. Of course, I did mention that we have a TriggerTech Diamond trigger in here. And that is really about it. Sitting on top right now is an Athlon Midas TAC scope that Athlon was nice enough to send out to us to try out. And we've got it mounted in a Bobro Engineering quick release mount up here. So that is this rifle overall. You will be seeing more video on it as we go through testing the Midas TAC. And when we run through the review of the Midas TAC, I'll also talk a little bit more about the rig because everybody wants to know what rifles I'm using to test scopes. That is it for this Mail Call Mondays. This guy actually ran a little bit long. We're getting this out in the middle of the week because we are still backed up trying to get things done. January is probably our busiest month because we are spooling up for SHOT Show. So what I need from you guys is drop a comment down below and tell me what it is that you want to see us cover at the 2020 Shooting, Hunting, and Outdoor Trade Show. So you hear something coming up, you hear something that interests you, please drop it in the comments down below. I read all of the comments. I have a fairly long list right now of different booths that we are going to go to at SHOT Show. So please let me know what you want to see so we can add it to the list and we can try to make sure that it gets covered. That's it for this Mail Call Mondays. If you guys have any questions or comments, leave them in the comments section down below or send them to us on Facebook or Twitter. If you like the video, please make sure you like, share, and subscribe. And click that little bell icon to be notified when we release new videos. If you guys want to support the videos that you know and love, please check us out over on Patreon. We would love to have you there. And I want to remind you guys that we are still selling these logo tumblers. Our friends at Red Ghost Custom Engraving are knocking them out for us. Quite a few of you guys have already picked them up. They do help support the show, so we'll leave that link down below. And until next time, get out and shoot.